From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, I'm Paris Alston. Welcome to Consider This from Boston, where we all remember when schools started closing down one after another last year. When that happened, state education officials had a laundry list of new challenges to deal with. One of them was making sure the process of bringing new teachers into the profession didn't come to a screeching halt. So in response, they began issuing emergency teaching licenses. WBUR education reporter Carrie Young has been digging into that process and found it's actually come with some unexpected benefits. Hey, Carrie, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Paris. Glad to be here.
How did this emergency system for giving out teaching licenses first come about?
Well, so the original reason actually had mostly to do with these teaching license certification tests, which are known as the MTELs. And normally aspiring teachers have to pass a set of these tests among other requirements to get a license. But when the pandemic hit and shut school buildings down, the buildings that people go to take these MTELs also shut down. They're back up and running now, but it's a much reduced capacity, all of which has left the state with about a 13,000 test backlog. And so the state and teachers unions kind of knew that schools would be needing that teacher pipeline to continue to be flowing this year, especially because schools would be stretched because of retirements or maybe increased leave of absence requests due to COVID. So they worked together to create this temporary emergency license system to keep things moving.
And you found that this process was basically a kind of accidental experiment. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I got that term from one of the researchers I spoke to for this story, but I think it fits so well here. It's accidental because the results of this policy surprised a lot of people, including state leaders. That original intention was to just keep the pipeline flowing, but they found that at least 25% of these emergency licenses were granted to people of color, which is significantly higher than the state's teacher workforce overall. Right now, only about 8% of Massachusetts teachers are Black, Indigenous, Latinx, or Asian. And that's even though, about 40% of the student population are people of color. And, you know, I think this is an experiment, too, in a way, because it infused a lot of new teachers into this system who have something significant in common. You know, they haven't had to take this licensure test. And state officials had been thinking for a while that the MTEL might be playing a role in the lack of teacher diversity here in Massachusetts, but it was hard to say that definitively. No one had studied it. And this program, with its, you know, swift and broad implementation, mostly out of necessity, will create a lot of really rich data that officials say they're really excited to begin exploring.
So it seems like the pandemic basically eliminated a lot of the barriers that can keep people, particularly people of color, from becoming teachers. But is that oversimplifying it?
No, I mean, I think that's pretty spot on. This really did highlight a lot of the barriers that were there. And now that they're not, you know, we're seeing some of the results. When I asked Joshua Goodman, a Boston University researcher, about how the lack of the MTEL requirement might be playing a role, he said, you know, his previous research into the teacher pipeline would kind of back that up, or at least support that idea, because only 13% of people who attempt these MTELs or these tests are people of color. So it's really not diverse even at that test-taking point. And then also what I found interesting in this story or research for the story was the financial angle of this program too. You know, a lot of the people with these licenses were paraprofessionals just before the pandemic, or they were already working in the classroom. They just weren't a lead teacher. Those positions don't pay as well as being a lead teacher. And so with less income, it's harder for them to move up. Adam Yanez, who is now a middle school teacher with an emergency license in Framingham, said that was the case for him. You know, the college courses he needed to become a lead teacher were just really expensive.
I think that, you know, by allowing people like myself to have the income to contribute to our education and also the experience, mm-hmm. I think that it is a very good investment.
And Yanez also told me that he's really glad that the students in his class can see someone who looks like them in front of the classroom, especially because, you know, that's so rare in Massachusetts schools right now. For them to see, you know, themselves in their leader, he said, is a really good thing.
I can imagine. And the state says this emergency program is going to stick around a little while longer, right?
Yeah, it's going to stick around until at least the end of next school year, which is when the state thinks that they can catch up on the MTEL administration backlogs.
All right, that's reporter Carrie Young. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Before we go, I should tell you what else is up. A long-awaited study from the state's Department of Public Health links a now-closed chemical facility in Wilmington to a cluster of cancer diagnoses among children decades ago. The study found a connection between childhood cancer and prenatal exposure to the chemical called NDMA. The children were thought to be exposed through the town's drinking water. Lee Brooks of Wilmington was one of the people affected. She lost her son Paul to leukemia.
I feel kind of glad this is over with. It's a long wait. On one hand, I wanted the study to come out sooner so the awareness and the action would be taken towards cleanup and enforcement of regulations.
DPH says Wilmington's drinking water is no longer contaminated. And we end today with some good news for hockey fans. The Bruins are hosting the New York Islanders tonight, and thanks to a rollback of pandemic restrictions, they'll have people in the stands cheering them on. TD Garden president Amy Latimer says the stadium can have only 2,200 fans inside right now. For perspective, that's about 10% of the arena's full capacity. Each person will have to take a pledge on their phones that they are feeling well and have not been knowingly exposed to COVID-19.
They answer questions and then they get this nice little green check mark. And we actually check that before they go through security and before their ticket scan to make sure that they've agreed to the promise.
Those in attendance will be limited to groups of four or fewer and seated with social distancing. So hopefully with fans and a home ice advantage, the Bruins can pull off a win tonight. From the newsrooms of WBUR and GBH, the greatest combo since a hockey puck and ice, I'm Paris Alston. Be well.